From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, you can call us right now at 800-462-7413. Along with our caller, Zorba, some interesting topics to talk about.
Yes, we're going to talk about the importance of a spouse or a significant other, a term that I've never liked but certainly means something, helping you during surgical recovery. We'll talk about the implications for that, for recovery from any illness at all. And then we're going to talk about middle-aged whites, and middle-aged white guys turned out to have an increase in their death rate. In other words, the improvements that have been occurring over the last 50 years may be not occurring for middle-aged white guys. Maybe leveling out. We'll talk about what that study shows.
And our recipe?
Roasted butternut squash soup. Now, I have to tell you something. A squash, not my favorite thing in the world. I don't eat a lot of squash, but I happen to love squash soup. It just has a different texture that I'm really akin to. And this is, well, any season is squash season because you can always get squash. It's great. It's great. Try it. You will like it.
800-462-7413, the number to call if you have a question for Zorba. To the phones now, Zorba, and a listener in Woodward, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I have a spot on my abdomen, and it starts kind of like it starts tickling, and then it starts itching, and then little bumps develop, and then it forms a lesion. At first, I thought it was a ringworm. I traded it with over-the-counter antifungals, but they didn't seem to help. And I finally got a steroid cream, and it got rid of it. But then it would come back. I finally went to the doctor, and he said it was a nickel allergy, and he gave me a steroid cream. But I went to nickel-free belts and stuff like that, but it still comes back from time to time.
Nickel allergies, by the way, are not uncommon. When we have a silver buckle, most of the, you know, cheap, inexpensive silver buckles are nickel buckles.
Really? I've never heard of a nickel allergy.
Yep, and they're not uncommon because blue jeans often have nickel on them, and it's a button, and it then rubs against your skin, and voila, you end up getting that. By the way, how long has this gone on? When did you first notice it? How many years ago?
It's been a couple years, maybe 3 years now.
Yeah.
Like I said, it comes and goes.
Yeah, it tends to come and go. So you now have nickel-free belts. Now, you're sure that they're nickel-free, by the way.
Yeah, that's when I bought it. It's supposed to be anti-allergy, nickel-free.
Okay, because that's an important thing. When you went to your doctor and they did that, did they give you a stronger steroid cream at all?
Yes, it was a prescription.
Okay, so first of all, let's talk about it. When you get a nickel allergy, generally, if you get rid of nickel, that little spot will go away. But sometimes you need to get something. You've got to get out the big guns. There are different steroid creams. There actually are levels. It's like level one, which is hydrocortisone over the counter, and then you've got level five, which another set of prescription creams, Halog being one of them, but a whole bunch of creams that are in that higher level. What I think I might do, if it were me, is I would call up my doctor and say, hey, I still have this nickel allergy on and off. I don't have any nickel belts, and I want to have a really strong steroid cream, one small tube just to kind of get rid of it and knock it out. And that might be occurring. In other words, you might still have some smoldering residual, not of nickel in your skin, but of a memory in your skin of that nickel allergy, and you just don't have it. It's not strong enough to get rid of it. That's what I would do. I think you need a stronger cream. That's all. One stronger cream, you put it on often for 1 or 2 weeks, and that'll usually get rid of it. Now, I do want to tell you, for some, this sort of skin memory, and I have no idea why it occurs. I've never seen a good explanation. We use something called the retrospectroscope in medicine. In other words, we look at something and then we try to figure out and we go, well, it's probably from this and probably from that, when in fact, we don't usually know often in those situations what it's from. And your skin's got a memory of some sort, and I would just get the stronger cream, put it on for a week or so to get rid of it. If it doesn't get rid of it, then it may just be something that recurs from time to time. You just have to treat it. That's all. You're doing the right thing. Just stay away from nickel. No nickel rings, especially an issue for women who often get costume jewelry and has nickel. Nickel earrings, nickel studs. Once again, more of a problem with women than for men, because more women wear earrings than men. Good luck.
All right. Well, thank you much.
Thanks for sharing that. Appreciate it.
We appreciate that call at 800-462-7413.
So you never knew about nickel allergy.
Never heard of nickel allergy.
Yeah. Yeah. And usually people come in and they go, what is this little bump right in the, you know, in my belly? And it's right where nickel is. And it's, you know, and it's a belt buckle. You know, it's the Levi jeans type of thing.
And
that,
as you suggested, we aren't even sure something is nickel.
Yeah. Right, we don't know if it's nickel. The stuff we call silver is often nickel-plated stuff, because nickel is cheap and silver is not as cheap.
That's true. 800-462-7413 to a Spokane, Washington listener now, Zorba. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, how can we help?
Well, in the winter of 2010, I noticed I started having what I thought was just chapped lips, because I was living in a very cold climate, but they tend to burn and sting and turn bright red. And, of course, when they're inflamed, I do lick them, and they do become chapped. But that's not the base of what's happening. It comes and goes at random times. There's not much of a pattern. The only pattern I may have noticed is when I get sick with a cold, it will rapidly disappear. So it's been going on for about 5 years.
Uh-huh.
The only thing I'm seeing on it now is petroleum jelly.
And are you on any medicines at all?
I am. I'm on tamoxifen.
And
I do have a couple of little steroid creams and things that I use for different issues.
Okay. And you're on tamoxifen because you had breast cancer in the past, right?
Yes.
Okay. And I don't know if dryness is a side effect of tamoxifen. I would call the pharmacist, because that's what I would do. They have a book called Facts and Comparisons. And if it's greater than 5%, then it's more likely to be there. If it's less than 5%, it often means there's just randomness and noise in the system. So the first thing I would do is I'd call the pharmacist, have them look in Facts and Comparisons, ask them whether or not dryness is an issue, and I would do it. And that's what I would do. And I can't, believe it or not, as much as I remember, I don't remember all the side effects of all the medications, so I do that. I wouldn't Google it on the web, because I want a pharmacist to look at it and say yes or no, because on the web you're going to find all sorts of junk and noise in the system. Number one.
Right.
Number two, change your toothpaste. What are you using?
I use Melaleuca toothpaste. So.
Well, I would go to Sensodyne. Sensodyne is a good toothpaste, doesn't have fluoride in it. There's a lot of stuff in toothpaste. If you read the label, it's sodium lauryl sulfate and a whole bunch of other things that are in there. And sometimes, you know, when we brush our teeth, we're really messy, and it goes over our lips, and toothpaste is a surprising irritant to lips for people who have it. So I would go to Sensodyne right away and see whether or not that made a difference, because quite often it's not exactly an allergy, but an irritation for that. Next thing I would try is, if it bothers it, I try maybe a week of an over-the-counter hydrocortisone cream. They're 0.5%. They're minimal. I would use that for a week or two and just see whether or not that would make a difference. I wouldn't do that right away. Once again, I check the drug, check the Sensodyne, and check that. The final issue is that dry lips can just be a problem often when you go out, you know, in the sun. Are you in the sun a lot?
Well, in the summer, I'm in the sun a lot.
Okay.
I live in a northern climate.
It worse in the summer than in the winter?
No, it doesn't seem to have a pattern like that.
Okay. If it's worse in the summer than in the winter, or worse when you're outside, then you need a lip balm with SPF in it. But I would guess the tamoxifen or the toothpaste are the two things that I would look at right away. How old are you?
47.
Gosh, you sound like you're in your 30s. You don't sound like you're in your 40s at all.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Because it is a problem. As we get older, our skin gets drier. It's just one of the things that happens with the elastic properties and other things that occur in the skin. The dermatologist can tell you why. But our skin just gets drier as we get older. So.
Think petroleum jelly is okay?
Oh, petroleum jelly is great. You know, I mean, it's okay. You know, it's very it's the most neutral thing, you know, that you can have, and okay. You know, you can buy it up. No, petroleum jelly is as neutral as you can get. Yes.
Great.
Works
Thank
well.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
I think you sound like you're in your 30s, Zorba.
Right. Hey, I just went to my 50th high school reunion. You know what? I did not sound like I was in my 30s. However, there were some people at the reunion who sounded like they were in their 90s. So I looked and I said, I'm not so bad. I'm in the middle of the pack here.
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. But, Zorba, for our next call, we talk about an article in JAMA which suggests that it's very important after surgery to have care, loved ones to help you out.
Yeah, loved ones to help you out. And, you know, spouse, significant other, somebody living in the house. You know, we don't have a term except loved ones is probably the right term.
Yeah, so
It was a very interesting article from JAMA Surgery. So they're looking specifically at surgery, but you could really expand this to illness. It doesn't have to be surgery. They looked at 1,500 people, 50 and older. Okay, so these are older adults in terms of 50. 1,000 were married. 184 were divorced or separated, 300 were widowed, and 35 were never married. So they looked at a variety of things.
Yeah.
And the researchers collected information on whether or not they needed help in what are called ADLs, activities of daily living, dressing, washing, bathing, eating, toileting, getting in and out of bed, and so on. They interviewed them 2 years after their surgery, okay?
Right.
Very important, 2 years after the surgery. So about 20% of the married patients had either died or developed a new dependency within 2 years. You know, some of them had issues of dependency. So 20% of the married. But you look at the divorced, it went up to nearly 30%. Okay, if they were divorced, they controlled for other things. If they were divorced, it went up to 30%. If they looked at people who were widowed, that went up to 33%. In other words, it went up even higher if they were widowed. So the divorced, the separated, or the widowed people did not do as well as the people who were married. In this article, they just looked at married people because it was easy to define. And that's very, very interesting.
Yeah, this is near and dear to me, this study. As you know, I've just undergone kind of major surgery.
Yes.
And I can't imagine trying to recover from that without having a loving wife with me.
Oh, yeah. No. You underwent a major surgery without a loving wife. It's very clear that you would have not recovered the same way, both physically and mentally, because it's not just a physical thing. It's also a mental thing.
Yeah.
And it's the same. My wife, Penny, has had some multiple surgeries, and I can't imagine how she would be.
You were there for her.
Yeah, I was there for her. So being there for somebody else in a loved one in the time of physical stress, surgery being that, and certainly illness, makes a big difference.
And it seems to me a paid caregiver wouldn't be anywhere near the same.
Please. A paid caregiver. Paid caregivers are wonderful, but they're not family.
Yeah. 800-462-7413, toll-free, and a Springfield, Missouri listener joins us next. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Zorba and Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help you?
Well, early in 2013, I had an outpatient lumpectomy, and the next day I developed a number of pulmonary embolisms in both of my lungs and also other clots in my legs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I have to say it was really scary and a very traumatic event. So I spent the next several days in the hospital while my clotting level was adjusted, and they placed me on warfarin.
Mm-hmm.
Then about 8 months ago, about a year and a half after being placed on the warfarin, a friend introduced me to fermented homemade milk kefir, and I loved the taste, and I loved the nutritional benefits. So I started making it at home because buying it in the grocery store was very expensive. So I probably should tell you that from the very beginning of all this, I was having a pro-time blood test every 2 or 3 weeks, and I was strictly adhering to my diet, but for some reason, the results began to vary widely soon after I started drinking the kefir.
Mm-hmm.
So when I spoke to my doctor about it and I mentioned the kefir, she she nearly went into a panic and said I was forever to drink the kefir again because it was so very high in vitamin K, which I didn't realize. So when I went home that day, I looked at the printout that the hospital had given me about the dietary restrictions for people on warfarin. And, you know, nothing was mentioned about fermented drinks.
Right, right. It's usually calciferous vegetables and things.
Yeah.
I want to go back for just a minute because I've got some ideas for you. First of all, you went in and had a lumpectomy. What was the result of the lumpectomy?
It was malignant.
It was malignant. Okay, and you've had and you've had that. You're done with that? Are you on medication, tamoxifen or anything?
Anastrozole, which is a generic.
Okay, which is a generic. Okay, so you're on that. That was done. Importantly, these are one of the side effects of surgery. That's one of the issues. So you almost died. You know, you had significant side effects in the surgery. And I mention that because lumpectomies and any kind of surgical procedures, we can't look at them as just the surgery. We always have to look at the side effects. So you had treatment. Now, are you still on warfarin now?
No.
You're
no,
off the warfarin.
The day that I talked to the new doctor, she took me off of it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, warfarin is a dangerous drug. It's useful and it's dangerous. So you have to be careful and you've got to look at the risks and the side effects. If it's, you know, if your blood is too thin, if you will, and doesn't clot, you hit your head, you can have a bleed in your skull. And if your blood is too thick, then you might have another blood clot. So generally, it's 6 months or longer, depending on the situation, and then you stop what you're doing. So I don't think the kefir was part of it. Now, do you still see that other doctor that said the kefir was part of it?
No, she moved away.
Oh, she moved away. Okay. You like kefir, huh?
I do. I love it. And the nutritional value
it's great.
Is huge.
It's huge. It's wonderful. And there's a lot of stuff. There's, you know, more and more we talk about probiotics. And I say spend your money in the grocery store versus industrialized products. Whether or not they say nature or, you know, big company or anything, they're made and they're industrial. If you want to go natural, then you eat natural foods. And kefir is as natural as you can get. Keep it up.
Well, good. If it's safe, I'm going to go back to making and drinking it.
Make it and drink it, and then you'll save money.
Yeah, I appreciate your help.
Well,
thank
you
so much.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate the call. Thank you. Before we take a break, Zorba, let's take an email question from a listener named Maya. She writes, Dr. Zorba, my brother has had benign positional vertigo for several years. It is essentially dizziness that occurs when he changes his head position. He's been to doctors and has done the maneuver that is recommended, but with no positive results. Is there anything else that you can recommend for this?
Well, the maneuver is called Epley's maneuver, or Epi's. I always mispronounce it. We'll put it on our website, zorbapastor.org, and we'll connect, by the way, the YouTube, the way people have this, can do this at home. Benign positional vertigo is where you're dizzy. And I get it periodically. I get it once every year or two. And as soon as I get it, I do that maneuver right away. I do it twice a day, sometimes three times a day, and it helps. The problem is it doesn't help for everyone. And there's a theory that this is due to little crystals that are in the semicircular canals that... that kind of get out of place. Sometimes a low-dose antihistamine will work called meclizine once or twice a day. It works for some people. For other people, they have to do with the maneuver numerous times per day. And then for other people, they just have to avoid that. They have to realize when they get up in the morning, they have to get up, sit in bed, they get dizzy, they lie down, they get up, they sit in bed. Sometimes it takes two or three times of moving that head to stop the dizziness. And then when they go from, you know, if they're lying down, you know, they can get dizzy. And I have to tell you from personal experience, when I go to my trainer and he has me lie on my back and I'm looking up at the ceiling, I'm a little dizzy. And it's clearly from my positional vertigo.
I get it from getting a haircut. You lie back and get your hair washed.
Yeah, because you have the same thing.
And This is a show about me.
It's a show about us. It's not just about you. It's about us. I get dizzy.
But I do a PT.
Yes.
And he twists me around.
He twists you around. Yeah, the PT. Well, it's called Epley's Maneuver. And as I said, we'll put the YouTube video. There are a lot of YouTube videos that we'll connect on our website because people can do this at home. It can be very, very useful a couple times a day. And that's kind of the treatment. And then you kind of adjust to it. Mine started 10 years ago. It doesn't bother me 95% of the time. But every time I lay down, I look up at the ceiling. It bothers me. accept it, and then I work with it because. Because when you're 68, you accept it and you work with it. You're not going to change it.
Have a question for the good doc? Zorba is here to help. Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or post it on Facebook. And don't forget, I periodically tweet.
We have a squash recipe coming up. They aren't all good.
Hey, squash is okay. This is one of the good ones.
That's coming up. More of your calls, of course, some of your emails, and we'll be quack, 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 quacking up with Dr. Zorba here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. We'll get more of your calls right after we do the recipe. Let's do that now, Zorba.
Now, the recipe is roasted butternut squash soup. I noticed that you rushed over. You didn't even say, like, we've got a delicious recipe for squash or, wow, I love squash every day. Squash is my favorite vegetable. Well, you have something against squash?
You've talked about this.
Are you anti-squash?
You've talked about this before. In squash season, whatever that is, you open your door and sometimes you find squash in front
true.
Of your door because nobody
like
knows
zucchini.
What to do with it.
Nobody knows what to do with squash these days. It doesn't matter which side of the political spectrum you're on, squash is squash. So this is roasted butternut squash soup, and you can get squash any time of the year. But, you know, it's seasonally always in autumn because, you know, it's an autumn crop, and that was one of the reasons that it was good. Highly nutritious. Has some good calories, has some fiber, and I happen to love it in a soup. So let's start it with 4 pounds of whole butternut squash, halve lengthwise, remove the seeds.
4 pounds whole butternut squash, halved lengthwise, and seeds removed.
Did you know there were seeds in the middle of squash?
I guess I did.
I haven't dwelled on that. Obviously, you haven't dwelled on it because you have not opened up a squash in years.
Or ever.
Now, do you like squash in Vietnamese cooking, Laotian cooking? Do you like squash curry?
I guess I do.
Obviously, I cannot.
Don't they camouflage it with seasoning?
Yeah, with seasoning, that's right.
Okay,
2 tablespoons of unsalted butter, although if you don't have unsalted butter, there's not a lot of salt in this, so don't be concerned.
2 big tea, unsalted butter.
That's right. Sometimes I don't have unsalted butter in the house, and I do just use salted. Mm-hmm. 1 medium Granny Smith apple.
1 medium Granny Smith apple.
Now, Granny Smith is tart, so really it is the apple to use.
Yep.
And stay away from a delicious, red, delicious apples. You're laughing. You know, it is
my most unfavorite
apple. You know, I would use a Gala or another kind. I wouldn't use red. Okay.
Okay.
1/2 of a medium yellow onion.
1/2 a medium yellow onion.
8 fresh sage leaves. The sage leaves do make a difference. If not, you could use a teaspoon of dried sage that you might have around the house.
Okay. 8 fresh sage leaves.
And I always have some dried sage around the house. 2 1/2 cups of low-sodium veggie or chicken broth, your choice.
2 1/2 cups low-sodium veggie or chicken broth.
2 1/2 cups of water.
2 1/2 cups of water.
And see, we're going to use 1 1/2 teaspoons of kosher salt. So you say, why am I doing this and using low-sodium broth? And that's because it has better flavor to it. 1 1/2 teaspoons, preferably, of kosher salt.
1 1/2 little tea kosher salt.
Regular salt. You can shimmy that in if you want to. 1/4 teaspoon of ground black pepper. 1/3 of a cup of heavy cream.
1/3 of a cup heavy cream.
So you've got to use a little heavy cream in here, too.
Yeah.
Okay, let's make it. Heat the oven to 425 degrees and arrange a rack in the middle. Line a baking sheet with aluminum foil. Place the squash pieces cut side up on the baking sheet. Melt a tablespoonful of the butter. Brush it all over the tops and inside of the squash halves. Season generously with salt and pepper. Roast it until knife tender. That's about an hour. So that you're basically making the squash. Meanwhile, while you're doing that, peel and core the Granny Smith, cut the onion into a medium dice, melt the remaining tablespoon of butter in a large Dutch oven or a large pan, add the apples, onions, sage, season with a bit of salt and pepper, cook stirring occasionally until softened, which is about 7 to 10 minutes. Remove the pan from the heat, set it aside. Okay, so you've got the squash that's cooked, you've got the Granny Smith apples and the onions that are cooked. So you've got that all cooked together. Next, what you want to do is scoop out that squash that's already cooked into the saucepan, put it in the saucepan with the Granny Smith, then add the broth, water, a little bit of salt and pepper to taste, bring it to a boil, heat it, breaking up any large pieces of squash that are in there because you're going to mix it up. And I usually actually use a mashed potato, I don't know what you call it, mashed potato masher.
Yeah.
To actually move it around, and then cook the whole thing for about 15 minutes just to make sure the big pieces are there and you've got it hooked up. Now, here's where it comes. You want to puree the whole thing. My recommendation is get an immersion blender. Have you ever gotten or seen an immersion blender?
No idea.
The immersion blender is like a blender. It's got a blender blade, and you connect it into the wall, and you put it right in the pan. Put it right in the pan, and it mixes it all up. You
really?
Don't have to take it out. And it's like, all of a sudden, voila, you're done. So basically, the recipe is cooking the squash, adding these wonderful Granny Smith apples to there, and then, with onions in there, and it's a delicious recipe.
You really make this sound good.
I make it sound good. That means if it's good to you, I have succeeded. And if you want a copy of today's recipe,
what do I do?
All you have to do is fire up the computer and go to ZorbaPastor.org. You can look at this recipe. You can look at other fine recipes. You can see pictures of Tom and I. ZorbaPastor.org. Or, of course, you can find us on Facebook.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And, Zorba, let's get to a Waukesha, Wisconsin listener now. Hi.
Hey, I got a question on purple potatoes. They're purple all the way through. And red potatoes that are red all the way through, how healthy are they for you? Are they more healthier, like green peppers, red peppers,
It's an interesting point because these are heirloom potatoes, or they've been hybridized because potatoes have different colors on them. So I've seen the purple potatoes. My mother got reds, but the reds were white on the inside.
Sure.
Do you get red potatoes that are red on the inside also?
Yes, they are.
Okay,
I cut one open, it's red all the way through.
Yeah, so the red potatoes I haven't seen yet. The purple ones I've seen. So let's look at it from a nutritional standpoint. First of all, if you look at it generally, most of the nutrition of the potato is going to be starch. And whether it's red or purple, hybridize that way it's okay. Green I stay away from because green can be problems with the eyes, and potatoes may be old. I mean, that's not a hybridized potato. I don't know if green would actually sell, so I don't know if they've actually hybridized that at all. Now,
well, I was told that how they get green is sitting in the grocery store by the fluorescent light.
No, they get green often because they're old. So that's the issue. So even if they sat next to incandescent lights, they would get old too. But the reds and the purples are generally the same nutrition, with one exception. There's a general rule in Mother Nature, like form and function and how they follow one another, that the more colorful a vegetable it is, the more micronutrients it has. Vitamins, minerals, flavonoids, carotenoids, and things that we don't know about at all, like carotenes. So I would say that the nutrition may be better in a colored potato than it is in a potato that is not colored. There's something that's happening with the color that may be nutritionally better. Mm. It definitely isn't worse. There's no doubt about that. But you may be onto something. It may actually be better because, as I said, color tends to mean that there's more that's going on within the vegetable. Even though the analysis right now might not show anything, the reality is we can't analyze for everything. We only analyze for the things that we know about.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for the tip.
No problem. Have a great day.
You too. We appreciate the call at 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, a Harrison, Idaho listener is with us. Hi.
Yes, Dr. Zorba and Tom. Thank you for your time.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question about COPD. I have a manageable case of it, at least at this point. But there's a clinic opened up in Coeur d'Alene, not too far away, that's offering, it's a pain clinic, but they're offering amniotic stem cell therapy for COPD. And it's, the first visit was free, so I went in to talk to them about it.
Uh-huh.
He said there's very few places in the country that are doing it yet, and they don't have any statistical information.
Uh-huh, right.
That's first, just it. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and the first visit was free. Uh-huh. How much is how much is the second, third, fourth, and fifth visit?
Yeah, that's the trouble. Is it's not free as far as you know, they're very depth charging for beyond about $10,000 for the therapy.
Yeah, that's right.
That's just it. Is there's no, it's new enough according to them. According to my boy, who looked it up on the computer for me, but there's no statistical information about it yet. To where a person can say this is effective or it isn't.
Yeah, save your money.
Okay.
That's the short answer. Save your money. It's a good example of charlatanism. You go in, the first visit is free, and we say, well, this is new enough, so we can't give you any statistics on it, but you give us $10,000, and we're going to use the word stem cells, so we're going to cloak it in the veneer of science and say this is amniotic. So it's amniotic, sounds good. It's a good sounding word because it's like embryo and baby. Stem cell, another good word, and we'll put that in your body, and we don't have any statistics, but Fred over here got better, and he was able to, you know, lift 500 pounds, and before that, he couldn't even lift himself out of bed, and it's just a good example of people who are bilking you. I mean, it's the same thing as the Nigerian, let's give you $10 million, just send me your Social Security card. It's absolutely junk. Now, will stem cells produce something one day? I think so. I think there's a really good chance it will. But when it produces something, you better believe there are a few things that will happen. First of all, there'll be science behind it. Second of all, there'll be a lot of money behind it. There'll be $1 billion. If there's any cure for COPD or help for COPD, you better believe that there will be a tremendous amount of money put it in there. And then when you actually get that, those amniotic cells, $10,000 might sound like it's even cheap, but you'll get what you pay for.
Yep.
In other words, one day it'll be there, it'll cost money, but these guys, they are taking you absolutely, to the cleaners. Do not spend your money.
Well, thank you, Dr. Zorber, but that's just it. That's why I called you. They ain't going to take me to the cleaners because I'm trying to check them out first. And you were a person I figured I could trust your opinion.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And thank you for your trust. We try to do the right stuff. Appreciate it.
Well, I consider the wife and I both consider that you do a public service with your show.
Well, thank you.
You and Tom both.
Thank you
very
much.
Very nice.
Thank you much. Take
appreciate
care.
The call.
Appreciate it.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And for the break, Zorba, let's take a dive into the murky waters of medical quackery. It's time again for Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quack it up with Dr. Zorba.
Okay, Zorba, tell us about Dr. Silas Mitchell and his rest cure.
That's right. Silas Mitchell, wonderful, wonderful doctor back at the turn of the late 1800s, and he said the cure for many things is bed rest. Taking to bed is very important. So, it basically meant invalid. Invalid meant taking to bed. But bed rest was not just bed rest. You were secluded from family contacts in order to reduce your dependence on others. The only person...
Wait a minute, you're what?
Yeah, family was not allowed in the room. You were placed in your room at bed. The only one that was really allowed in the room was a nurse who came in, massaged you, bathed you, clothed you, brought you food in there. You weren't in extreme cases, you weren't allowed even to use your hands. You were fed in the mouth, and you were there. And this was the idea. The idea was that this was effective in treating a whole bunch of things: high blood pressure, a stress, hysteria, which was thought to be a potentially female problem. problem.
Was the point all that other stuff were distractions?
No, it wasn't distractions. This is what you need to calm your mind. In fact, there was a book that was produced by a woman called The Yellow Wallpaper, and you could look at this as a horror story. It was her personal experience when she felt ill. She was ill. She was simply told she had to go to bed, and the specific instructions, she actually had Dr. Warren Mitchell, actually instruct her. She had to lie down an hour before each meal. Bed rest, she could sit in a chair, but lie down an hour before each meal. But she couldn't have more than 2 hours of intellectual life. So in other words, she, other than 2 hours a day, she wasn't supposed to touch a pen, paint anything, use anything with a pencil. You were simply supposed to lie in bed.
Couldn't talk with anybody?
Couldn't talk with anybody. Couldn't do anything. You're placed in bed. And bed rest was the treatment for a whole bunch of things. It was a treatment, first of all, for mental illness. It was a treatment for schizophrenia. Imagine that. It was a treatment for depression. Imagine you couldn't see your loved ones and you were placed in bed in a room.
That certainly wouldn't make you depressed.
It was a treatment for blood pressure. It was a treatment for asthenia. Asthenia was weakness. So if you were too weak, you weren't given exercise. You were sent to bed. It was a treatment for a whole bunch of things. And this was a treatment for about 20, 30 years. I mean, it caught on. It was an example of quackery. And it still lingers on. It still lingers on. People say, oh, you have a cold, go to bed and stay in bed.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
If you feel like you have to stay in bed for a cold, you know, because you feel better, stay in bed. But the fact is, there's no evidence that bed rest is different than sitting in a chair. And for some of us, if you have a cold, sometimes it's good to sit in a chair and actually go out and do other things. So it still pervades our culture that bed is good. You know, Dr. Weil, here it is 125 years, 115, 120 years later, he's still quacking up to us.
Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to this new segment? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or post it on Facebook.
Medical research coming up, more of your calls, of course, and an email or two, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. More of your calls coming up, but first, Zorba, a study shows that death rates are rising in middle-aged whites.
Right, and I want to talk about that. It's a big issue. The death rates are rising mainly, it appears, from suicide and drug issues, you know, drug overdoses. So I want to hit that, and then I want to put this into a perspective. So first, the perspective.
Yeah.
There was a study that came out very, very recently, looked at the death rates from 1968, the late 60s, to 2012. And the death rates are significantly better. Premature death from stroke has decreased by 80%. That is remarkable. Premature death from heart attacks has decreased by 74%. That's remarkable. Premature death from metastatic cancer, only about 12% to 14%.
Yeah.
Certain cancers are really good on lymphoma. Other cancers, once they've spread, we prolong life, but we don't cure it. Premature death from injuries, reduction of 40%. Remarkable changes over this last roughly 55-year period. So this increase in death that has been seen in the more recent statistics looking over the last few years is very worrisome. Suicide, drug abuse, they're kind of connected together. And I think, and this is a middle-aged white guys. These are the ones that seem to show it.
So do middle-aged white guys take more drugs? And
well, I think there are a couple of issues here that are important. First of all, depression. Number one, so do middle-aged white guys, are they more likely to go to their doctor and say, I'm depressed? Or let's say a middle-aged woman more likely to go to her doctor and say she's depressed. What do you think?
I don't think so.
I think a woman is more likely to go to a doctor because women take better care of themselves. They go to the physician more. Just we know that statistically. Men are less likely to go. Single men are very much less likely to go. They may think depression is just part of it. Antidepressants are great. Antidepressants reduce alcoholism. That's one of the other increases in middle-aged white guys. May reduce the reliance upon prescription drugs. They're very good drugs. So I think depression here is a major key issue that is undertreated.
So these are white guys, Hispanics, blacks, don't have the same...
Well, not. And when we look at the white and black statistics, there still is a major difference. We look at the rate for whites. Here's the number. The rate for whites is 415. Okay, 415. If we look at the 45 to 54 age group, 415 for every 100,000 in the white group. In the black group, it's a whopping 582 per 100,000. So there are other issues here. Access to medical care, getting medical care, the desire to get to medical care. But suicide... Alcoholism and drug abuse are intimately linked to depression. And if you're a middle-aged white guy and you think you're depressed, the time now is to call your doctor and seek help.
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Dr. Zorba. 800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba. A Hayden, Idaho listener joins in. Hi.
Hello, gentlemen. My question is dealing with my thyroid gland. For about 7 years ago, I started noticing I was feeling fatigue and a little lethargic. So I went to my doctor and as part of a yearly exam, and everything on the blood test looks okay, except my thyroid-stimulating hormone, my TSH, was in the 7 to 10 range, but my thyroxine, T4, was in the normal range, so they said I had subclinical hypothyroidism. I went on a dosage of thyroid medication, but I did not notice any improvement, and so I stopped taking the thyroxine because I was not experiencing any benefit.
Sure.
So my question is, even though I don't experientially notice any well-being, should I still take the thyroxine because it might be doing some benefits that I don't experience?
Yeah, good question. First of all, how long were you on it before when you were on it?
Actually, I was on it like 3 years or so.
Okay, so you're on it for a long time. In other words, 3 years was a long time. And did you go in initially because you were feeling fatigued? I mean, why'd you get it tested at all?
You know, I did. I was feeling fatigue, a little lethargic and stuff like that, particularly in the mornings. Usually in the afternoons and evenings, I kind of get revved up more. So yeah, I did.
And you didn't notice any change, like you said. There's no change with this.
Yeah, no experience.
You bring up a really good point. So there are a lot of people who have you might call subclinical, but who have minimal hypothyroidism, low thyroid, that have to be out there because we only check. We don't do a screening test. The feds have not recommended that. They've only recommend testing it if people have clinical symptoms. You know, so you came in, you had symptoms, they tested you. The TSH is the goal that we use. We don't really look at T4 anymore, except under certain circumstances when we do. But generally, we use TSH as the test, and we want to get that number within a normal range, because then it means you've got enough thyroid gland. If you were my patient, I would say take it. And even if you don't notice it's due to fatigue, I would say take it because I think thyroid is important for other things in your body that are not just fatigue. In other words, once you find it, you treat it. I think that's what most doctors would say. They would say, well, if you don't notice a difference, I would stop treating it because we know your thyroid isn't good. And there are a lot of things that thyroid does. So I would say, yes, you should stay on it. Now, from a fatigue point of view, you might still have fatigue. You have to look at other things that are going on in your life. You know, do you exercise on a regular basis?
I do.
How much sleep do you get? What time you go to sleep at night?
You know, I'm a really good sleeper. I normally crank out between 7 and 9 hours.
Okay, so you crank out, so you get a good amount of sleep.
Yeah.
Depression, do you have any depression? Depression, fatigue, and depression tend to commingle?
You know, I don't think so.
Uh-huh. And usually that's a good enough. I find that to be a good enough answer. People usually know if they're depressed. You know, they often say, yeah, I think I'm depressed. Mm-hmm. They go, I don't think so. That usually is it. How old are you?
74.
So, you know, age plays a role, although I have a lot of people in their 30s and they go, oh, my God, I'm just so fatigued. I'm getting old. In their 30s. Huh. 34. Yeah. Now, some of these people are completely normal, and other people, they're fatigued because they weigh 350 pounds, yeah, and they're 34. So they're right, but it's not age. So, you know, you're doing everything right, and it may be that your fatigue is, you know, you do stuff, you accomplish everything you want to accomplish.
I do. You know, it may take me a little longer, but I do.
So with I want to get this picture together. Where do you exercise, you sleep well, you eat right, you're at the right age. The fatigue is causing what? You'd like to do more? What would you like to do more of?
Yeah, you know, I kind of feel like I've kind of lost the energy to do more adventuresome type stuff.
Such as what?
Well, like travel and stuff like that. I seem to be a little more content with just kind of hanging around the house, reading books and listening to music more, you know?
So you have more contentment around the house and you feel good with that versus wanting to travel. So let me give you a little story. I've got really good friends of mine and they're in Slovenia now or in Slovakia or somewhere else. And they're on their way. They're going to Africa for a month. They're going on a safari. They invited me for a month in Africa. Before that, they just traveled to three places around the U.S. And I was thinking, I kind of liked being at home. I didn't feel like going to Slovenia. I've done a lot of travel when I was younger, and I kind of like being around the house. And the other day, yesterday, I put up a bird feeder for my wife, a really good bird feeder. And
but
I thought,
you travel
I like,
a lot.
I travel a lot, but I had no desire to do more travel. And I was thinking in my brain, like you are, is this an age-related thing? Maybe I'm getting older and I don't want to travel as much. Am I losing it? No. Maybe you're just more content at home.
I think maybe that's it.
It may be.
Hey, you know, I got one quick question related to this. Maybe you can. It's just driving me crazy.
Yeah.
That is, if my TSH is somewhat high, but I have enough thyroxine.
No. We use the TSH. That's what we use. The TSH, the TSH is what we measure, and that's what we work to. When there's a thyroxine issue, it's more complex. That's when I send them to my endocrinologist because my brain can't get around it because I don't see it very often. We do not look at the thyroxine on the whole for 95% of the people or more who have subclinical hypothyroidism. We only look at the TSH. That's what counts, and that's what we measure once a year when we check their thyroid. We do not measure thyroxine.
So I think you're recommending I stay on it.
I would stay on it, pick up a good book, read it in your house, and turn on the fire.
Okay, I'll do it.
and keep up the good work. Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. 800-462-7413. And before we head out today, let's hammer out another riveting round of rapid fire, where Zorba quickly tackles listener questions and comments from our inbox and Facebook page. You ready for this, Zorba?
I am ready.
First up, a longtime listener, Matt, asks, can you please tell me what you know about dangerous estrogenic compounds that may be present in soybeans and soy products? I have a friend who steers clear of them because she believes they may cause cancer.
I don't think they cause cancer at all. I mean, we've been eating soy for centuries and centuries. There's more breast cancer in America, and let me tell you, tofu is not on the menu at McDonald's.
Next up is Nigel, who has a suggestion that'll keep us on our toes. Zorba, in response to the recent caller suffering from nail fungus, sunlight and tanning is a fast, cheap, effective cure for most nail fungi. Thanks for a great show.
I don't believe it for even a second. I think that's propaganda from the tanning studios to try to get you to tan more. Meanwhile, you'll die of skin cancer. Stay away from those booths.
On we go to a listener named Jean who asks, the only fish my husband will eat is deep fried on Friday night fish fry. No salmon or tuna for him. Does shrimp count as a good-for-you fish like salmon or tuna?
Well, it certainly is a good for you fish, but to deep fry it, I think you're getting on the wrong side of the bad fat into your body. You might be better off eating tofu now than deep fried fish.
Boiled fish is really good.
And I wonder what deep fried tofu would taste like. Hey, that's something for the Iowa Fair next year. Mm-mm, good.
Speaking of fish, here's a correction from a listener named Dan, who is compelled to set the record straight on Beano. Dr. Zorba, contrary to assertions by a recent caller, Beano is produced by Aspergillus niger, AB100, and is not,
that's a big
and
word.
Is not derived from fish, except that fish scale powder is a substitute growth medium addition that enhances protease production greatly.
If you think I can comment on that particular question, you've got more faith in my brain than anybody else. I have no idea how Beano is made, but I think it works.
I don't even know what Aspergillus niger AB100 is.
Well, and a lot of people don't know what Beano is. Let's just talk about Beano
a little.
That's right.
Okay, I'm not quite sure what to think about this one, Zorba. It's from a listener named Mary. I'll just read it, and you let me know if this is good or bad. My husband and I listen to you faithfully every week. Good. But recently, my son showed us how to listen to your podcasts of shows we've missed. Good.
Good.
Last night, when I was attempting to distract myself from knee pain, I put one of your shows on, and it worked.
Good.
I was asleep in less than 15 minutes.
Bad.
Thank you so much.
Bad, that's right, exactly. There's good.
So
there's
two or three
bad.
Goods and a bad.
Three. That's right, got it. That's it, you got it.
And finally, some words of kindness from our wonderful comrades in the country, Ukraine. Hello, Zorba and Tom.
Oh, wow.
My friends and I really like your radio show. We listen with great pleasure. Thank you for your good advice and quality program. Keep up the great work. Good luck and prosperity. Your fan, Miroslav.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Thank you, World Wide Web. We would never be able to reach the Ukraine from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's wonderful.
And thank you. Let the other Ukrainians know. If you have a healthy living question for the good doctor, just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web.
At ZorbaPastor.org or through Facebook.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Colburn. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping for your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1125Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
From PR.